This meeting is now being recorded.
Morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the 50th plenary call of the CPT review. Is there anybody that's on the phone only and not visible in the Adobe Connect? And does anyone have an update to their statement of interest? Okay, well, why don't we jump right in and have Brian talk to us a little bit about what's going on with the DNS abuse study.
Hi, good morning, Jonathan. I hope everyone can hear me all right. Yes, the DNS abuse study is finally here. I haven't had much chance to really digest it. I doubt anyone here has as well. It's pretty technical. There's quite a lot of charts and data going into it, but I would just sort of emphasize a few points as you all take it in. It is an intermediate report, so a lot of the data that's been processed, it's just come in and hasn't quite been organized into the body of the text. So you'll see a lot of charts at the end, which are representative of the new data feeds we've acquired in the past few months. I would also point you to the basic breakdown of their calculations is between absolute numbers of abused domains and rates of abuse, which is based on an abused domains per 10,000. So there's two different kind of metrics there, and I would just sort of point you to those, that difference between the charts as you kind of analyze the results. I've only really been able to eyeball it. It doesn't look like there's any kind of smoking gun or large abnormalities. There are spikes in some of the charts that we don't have explanations for necessarily. So I imagine some of you will be asking that to yourselves. What do these spikes mean? We don't know yet, but that's one of the interesting questions for future discussions and future research. So that's really all I have to say about it, other than it'll probably take a few reads to kind of take it all in. There's a lot of interesting stuff there that I think this team will be interested in. So happy to try to answer any questions. Like I said, it's still pretty new to me too, but otherwise I'll leave it to you to discuss.
Thanks, Brian. If anyone's got questions, go ahead and raise your hands. And then I guess, Brian, do you have a 10,000-foot feeling about the study? When you say there's no smoking gun, does that mean that it's no
well, yeah, Jonathan, it seems that if you look at the absolute counts, of abuse domains. I mean, it's relatively constant in legacy TLDs. And, of course, you see a sort of expected jump right at the beginning of the new gTLD program when new gTLDs were delegated and therefore started getting abused to some extent. So you see, in terms of absolute counts, you kind of see a climb of abuse in new gTLDs. But when you look at the rates, a bit more sort of spikiness, I guess, but still lower rates of abuse in new gTLDs compared to legacies. So that's sort of my eyeball reading of it. We're still waiting on a fairly large abuse data set from SDF. And one of the things I'd like to do, I don't know if there's sort of a more rigorous sort of trend or quantitative analysis we can do. Because, you got to kind of squint at the charts and kind of take the scale into consideration. We're talking about, very large numbers here, so it's kind of hard to see. So I'll see if there's a better way to display the data. But short answer to your question, Jonathan, I hope I covered it. Rates seem to be lower in new gTLDs. Absolute counts, you see a climb over the three-year observation period, but I think that's sort of expected and they're naturally still lower in new GTLDs given lower registration volumes, I would think. So.
And I guess my other question is that I haven't looked at the report yet, so I apologize. But the
sure.
Are there any correlative effects? In other words, are there particular new GTLDs with higher rates of DNS abuse that we might be able to compare to other factors to look at indicators or I know you hate me using the word causation informally, but some sort of cross-tab associated with this so that those that feel wrong done by in the new GTLD program, we might be able to cordon off, you know, what the aspects of that are, at least begin to do that exercise.
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, you'll see. They do list the sort of most abused TLDs and registrars. So I think you can start looking at that, and it's sort of the usual suspects from what I read in the abuse literature that's out there. So yeah, take a look at that, and that's well when you can really start asking those correlative questions. You know, what explains that variation in abuse? Why are these guys the most abused? Is it something they're doing? Is it something the bad guys are doing? So there's not really explanations in here. As I've said before, this is really just the descriptive statistics. So that's, I think, a lot of the questions that would be prompted in your head, Jonathan, would be questions we'd ask down the road and maybe suggest for sort of more in-depth probative research questions, that kind of thing.
Okay. Does anybody else have questions or comments about the report? I know throughout this entire process of the past year and a half, I've quietly wished there were more smoking guns than there have been.
No easy answers. Yeah.
No easy answers here either.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't see anything in the comments. Thanks, Carlton, for the page reference, figure reference. I guess we'll go over this in some more detail in our face-to-face when everybody's had a chance to read it. But Jordan, do you want to... And talk a little bit about the current state of the parking paper.
Sure. This is probably another late-breaking development that I don't know if people have had a lot of time to look at. But a couple of things have been added to the parking paper. So the first happened, just for context for everyone, is that with the help of staff, we made some attempt to see whether or not we could find a correlation between parking rates and renewal rates. And this was done in an effort to support or validate the hypothesis that we've been talking about, that one of the reasons we might care about parking rates is because these domains would renew less, and therefore if a TLD had a high parking rate, it might look like it had a larger share of the market than would really be sustainable over time with a lower renewal rate. You might expect that TLD to shrink or grow less quickly relative to others in the market. And so when, for example, we've previously done our analysis on parking rates and made parking adjusted numbers for market share and for market concentration, this is sort of done on the premise that these park domains might have a different way of contributing to competition in the marketplace. So we did a very rough sort of swag at this. We had only a limited set of data, which is that we had parking rates for all TLDs from NTLD stats from December of 2016. So we really only had that 1 month in time for parking rates. That 1 month does represent the parking rate across the entire TLD, though, so it's a pretty broad sample. And similarly, ICANN has some data. They don't actually have renewal rate data, but we came up with a metric that we thought was a pretty good indicator of renewal rate, which is essentially the number of renewal transactions in that TLD divided by the sum of domains that were renewed and those that were deleted outside of the grace period. And we think that that in most cases should roughly represent the set of domains that at the end of a domain's validity period, it could either be deleted or renewed. In theory, you know, people, a small number of domains might be deleted at other times, but most people aren't going to delete their names when they still have validity on them. So I thought that was a pretty close, the best, at least certainly the best statistic we have to sort of stand in for a pure renewal rate number. And so we calculated that renewal rate for each TLD as well for a six-month period on the theory that that renewal rate, only the domains that are eligible in each month would be renewed or not. That might be quite a volatile number and affect a smaller population, so we did that over 6 months to get a broader sort of spectrum of that particular TLD. And so then we looked to see whether that parking number from December of 2016 correlated with the renewal number from the last half of 2016. And based on our very primitive initial correlation, we didn't see, or the linear regression that the staff ran, we didn't see a correlation between these two numbers in either new or legacy gTLDs at the 95th percentile, the confidence percentile. So far at least, so one thing that we've added to the paper is the statement that so far at least we haven't been able to see a relationship between the parking rate and the renewal rate. It's theoretically possible that a more sophisticated analysis that controlled for other factors that looked at a broader set of data would find one, but based on the set of data that we had available, we weren't able to see a correlation between the two. So as a result of that, I then went back and scaled back some of our discussion of the parking adjusted numbers because it didn't feel responsible to me to include a large discussion of these parking adjusted numbers if the sort of hypothesis behind them wasn't proved based on the data that we've had so far. And so we still include those numbers just to sort of point out that if you did the parking adjusted calculations, that the market share numbers in particular would change quite a bit. But now we also include a discussion saying, but the reason why you might do this, we don't really have very good confidence in that hypothesis. So that's one sort of set of changes that were made to the paper. And then there's a second set of changes that were made to the paper, which was just to include some discussion of geographic differences in parking behavior. One thing that I had noticed is that the number of inactive domains in the LAC study looked lower than what we see in most of the other studies, either previous papers on parking or the NTLD stats numbers on park numbers. So we sort of pointed out that was a regional difference, that there seems to be less and fewer inactive domains in Latin America. They didn't look at parking specifically. They just looked at active versus inactive. And then Stan and Kylie had previously put together, so Kylie just asked about this, so it is in the paper. You'll see in pages 4 and 5, Kylie. I think, yes, pages 4 and 5. We also included some discussion of the fact that in the Chinese language TLDs, in the top 50, we actually see very high parking rates, much higher than is typical across the new gTLDs. In fact, for example, that Jin has a 93% parking rate, which is very high. And we don't really have any explanation for that. You know, Kylie's talked about some of the factors that happen in China, and to the extent Kylie wanted to add some text with citations, that might be appropriate here too. But at the moment, we just sort of call out the difference and point out, so that there seems to be some regional differences in parking behavior as well, and so future may be useful for future regional studies to take a look at parking in particular. So that's it. That's how the paper has changed over the last couple of months. And I guess I'd open it up to have any questions or comments that people may have or suggestions on other improvements we might make to the paper.
Lorene, go.
Hey, Jordan. First of all, thanks. Thanks for the paper. I have questions and a comment. In reading the paper, and I will admit to have read it quickly, but it seemed to me to at least one statistic jumped out at me where if you take the parking rates into account, the percentage of overall registrations for new GTLDs seem to diminish by about half. Am I recalling that or characterizing that correctly?
It decreases by about a third. But yeah, it's a significant decrease.
A significant decrease. So I'm just wondering, and it didn't jump out at me what we make of that, so to speak. In fact, my overall comment for the whole paper is there's a lot of information but not a lot of signposting and conclusions. So it actually is a very difficult read. It's not lengthy and it's not the words aren't complicated, but it's a data dump, and I think we need to make this something more digestible than a data dump. Which is why I started with that statistic, because that, to me, seemed to be one of the most compelling statistics that we found. But either way, I think we need to orient the reader as to what this is and why it's important and where the deficiencies are, or not deficiencies, but where the, you know, where there's work to be done.
Sure. Yeah, so I don't know what to make of that number either, because it's just a number that we calculated. And, you know, if it were the case that we thought that there was a correlation between the parking rate and the new renewal rate, then we could say, you know, we could potentially project out and say, okay, as a result of this lower renewal rate that we're expecting from these TLDs, the effect on competition and market shares might be muted in the future relative to what we're observing right now. But since we haven't actually been able to affirm that hypothesis, so far the evidence is negative, not in favor of that hypothesis, I think it wouldn't be very responsible for us to say, you know, like we should expect that these TLDs are going to have lower renewal rates, because so far, you know, that doesn't seem to be the case based on the parking rates. So I'm not sure what to do with that number. That, you know, we've basically performed a parking adjusted calculation based on a hypothesis that so far we don't have a lot of evidence for. You know, if I ran the world, I would probably take out those parking adjusted statistics, because for precisely this reason, right? Because they're numbers that it's not clear what they mean or what to do with them. They're just a calculation that we performed because we had the data. However, I know that other folks on the review team have felt quite strongly that they should be included. So maybe I would defer to others who think those numbers should be included to sort of explain what they think they represent and, you know, how we could signpost them. Because to me, it's just a calculation we performed that doesn't have a particular meaning associated with it, which is why there's not really text explaining what to do with it.
So I would say that that's problematic. I think we either need to make a call to include this and tell people why we're bothering to include it, and I don't think it's enough to say we had data, so we performed this calculation, but there are flaws, so we don't really think it means anything. It, you know, I think we either need to not include it or include it, but we have to give it some sort of context, some more informational context, even if it's here is the data we have, here are here's the data we have, but we can't draw conclusions because otherwise just to include it sort of bare bones is almost I'll go back to my word problematic, because people who aren't immersed in this, and I am a little bit immersed in the parking issues just by way of being in this review team, but people who are just looking at it will see that number and, from what I'm hearing from you, Jordan, draw the wrong conclusion. And so, you know, that in that sense, we'd be misinforming if we don't do a better job of putting this into context.
Yeah, thanks, Lorraine. I tend to agree with you. I guess we can see what the sentiment of the review team is. I see Kylie's raised his hand, so maybe we can get his perspective.
Yeah, thank you, Jordan. Yeah, thank you. Just about Lorraine's question just raised, I agree that the readers of this report from different backgrounds or constituencies, they might ask us why do we include parking. I think originally we can tell them that originally we started from the competition analysis because the park has such a high parking rate, half or even more than half of those domains being parked significantly affects our calculations and conclusions on the competition side. That is where we start from. And that is our team's job to analyze the situation regarding competition. And also during this study, we also noticed that high parking rate also has other side effects, which would affect the consumer trust, etc. Although may or may not only from the new GTLD, but also from the legacy GTLDs, but we realize that this parking phenomenon is important for the entire DNSS industry. So therefore, we do include this parking analysis in our report. However, we do not have sufficient data, and secondly, the further studies of the parking effect is not our team's own mission. So therefore, we provide the conclusions within our scope of study, and also by providing what we have already done and collected for future studies, yes, I can finally decide to. So I think that would be my question, my answer to those questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Kylie. So I guess Jonathan's raised his hand. Let me jump to Jonathan, and I maybe have a couple thoughts. But go ahead, Jonathan.
Thanks, Jordan. Just taking off the chair hat and just speaking as another member of the review team, I find your discussion of the viability of this compelling, that all we're going to do is raise questions instead of answer them, because even in our definition of parking, our fairly broad definition of parking, we're including a number of things that are conceivably pro-competitive, that involve forwarding for marketing purposes or investments that help sustain smaller TLDs to get them over the hump to the greater sustainability. I mean, there's nothing but complexity there associated with a discussion about the implications of parking, and we don't have any data to support a hypothesis about it. And from the previous discussion over the DNS abuse report, we don't have support for the notion that there's a contribution to a lack of consumer trust in this area because of parking. in the new GTLD program. And I think we need to always look back and say what were the impacts of the new GTLD program. And my concern with that it's an overall thing to be considered, I can agree and say that the ICANN should study the parking phenomena further or something like that, but that this review team does not have the data to support a conclusion about parking or a parking-based phenomena brought on by the new GTLD program. And so, I mean, I'm entirely supportive of the notion of dropping those market share calculations and just including some of the work we did to try and to find correlations and to find theories and support hypotheses about parking, and that didn't ultimately work, and that explains why we don't have those statistics. Rather than spending a year having people throw different numbers at each other based on their underlying unsupported assumptions.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. I think that's roughly where I was going to end up after taking Kylie's feedback, which was essentially, I think, it is true. We know as a fact, that at least based on the way that NTLD stats computes it, that there is a differential in parking rates between new GTLDs and legacy GTLDs. That's a fact. It is also the case, as we point out, that these geographic variations seem to happen as well. And so in some areas, there seems to be quite a lot of parking, and in some areas, it seems lower. Those are all facts that we've discovered, and some of them pertain to the difference between new GTLDs and legacy GTLDs. What we don't really have any handle on is what the impact of parking is. And I think, you know, to a certain extent, Kylie's right. That's a global phenomenon. And so therefore, I find myself agreeing with Jonathan. It seems reasonable to point out that this is a difference between legacy GTLDs and new GTLDs, that we observe the difference. But we don't really understand the impact of parking at this point, and therefore, to the extent, to the extent this is an interesting question, it's probably something that deserves its own study as opposed to being wedged into the CCTRT. So that's roughly a support for taking out the parking adjusted numbers, but perhaps leaving roughly the rest of the text in, saying like we tried to figure out if this was meaningful, we couldn't figure it out. There is a difference, and maybe in the future people will want to look at that, but it's not directly related to the new GTLD production. And I see Kylie's raised his hand again. So go ahead.
Are those new hands from Laureen and Kylie or old hands?
Kylie's hand is new. I think Laureen's is old. Kylie, we can't hear you if you're trying to talk.
I muted myself. Sorry. I don't quite understand why we want to take out the calculation considering the parking effect, because we are doing that calculation. Well, and that does justify us as including the parking use within our reports. So, especially this is because there is a difference between the GTLD and the legacy ones. So, that is completely relevant to our mission. So, I don't quite understand why we want to take that part out. Thank you. Or maybe I am missing or misunderstanding something. Something that suggested to Jonathan that I should take that part out.
So, Kylie, I think all we're talking about is taking the market share calculations out. Imagine we had the data to suggest that the majority of new GTLDs were purchased by people with blonde hair, right? And so we found out that fully a third of the of all new GTLD registrations were made by blonde people, and therefore we could throw in a market share adjustment, calculation that controlled for blonde people because they make up such a big part of the market. And I think it's a thing.
What do you mean by blonde people?
It would beg the question, what impact does that have on competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice? And so that's, I think that's really the issue, is that we've failed to come up with a rationale for describing park domains as somehow less competitive or more harmful. And so, given our mandate to look at the impact of the new GPLD program in the framework of competition, trust, and choice, we don't have a reason to control for parking because we don't have a supported hypothesis for why parking has a negative or positive effect on competition, trust, or consumer choice. And again, I feel like I could come up with as many theories for why parking was pro-competitive as you could come up with for why it was anti-competitive. And so, to control for that market share as a result becomes arbitrary, even though we somehow want it not to be.
Okay. So, as I understand now, is that we do not have conclusion about whether the parking phenomenon is positive or negative. But we do have concluded that the new G program, new GTLDs and including the park, consider the parking effect, the competition is somewhat different. There is a difference. Without considering the parking effect. So that is a phenomenon that we have discovered in our study, and I believe that we are not saying parking is good or bad. We are just pointing out the fact. And so this, I think, is some kind of something we found that could be included in our report and used by future studies. So I think including that calculation with import, because that is in relation with the new GTLD program. There is indeed a difference. Okay. Measure it, whether it's good or bad, we do not reach any conclusion. I don't think I don't think we need to take them out. Just put the legal there, and that's something we have left for the future. I don't think there's any harm.
Yes, there is a harm. There is a harm. There's an implication, like by including that calculation, there's an implication that somehow parking is anti-competitive. By including that calculation in market share, we're suggesting that it's not real real competition.
Okay.
And that's, it's by definition harmful to suggest something that for which we don't have a proof, and it will have an effect on policy. It could have effect on the discussions that we're having going forward. I mean, I could be supportive of an appendix or something like that, where we just have a broader discussion of this issue to the extent that we have support for it. But I mean, anyone's free to do the math that they want to. But I suggest we shouldn't include what amounts to an arbitrary calculation in our paper. We don't have a guiding hypothesis to include. It is.
Here, I think that we're using an assumption assuming that market concentration ratio or the HHI itself is simply equal to competition. First, whether competition is good or bad, that depends. Secondly, concentration ratio itself does not equal to competition either. So I think we are jumping through at least two steps here and saying, so all including that calculation in our report, I do not see at pointing fingers and implying that parking is bad, because I wouldn't draw that conclusion. Yes, as far as those park domains do not harm the end users or any constituencies' interest, no, just leave it there. We are not, we are only merely stating the fact. So we shouldn't just assume ourselves that market concentration ratio itself is equal to competition, and competition is always equal to goodness. So I think so. In that, with that understanding, I personally I do not feel including that. That in our report is harmful. Thank you.
Thanks. I appreciate your input, and I don't mean to be glib about it. I am just concerned that we just include a calculation. I made a kind of a joke about people with light-colored hair, but let's say that we made an observation that a lot of the registration in the new GPLD program came from China.
Yeah.
So let's include another calculation that talks about market concentration if we exclude registrations from China.
Oh, splendid. That will be great. Especially considering the geographical difference. I just here at Texas, well, this afternoon within the ministry, we discussed that, and everybody agrees that is something that China needs to consider. Yeah, so I think, well, just include that part about China. That's great. I think that China does need to do so.
So I see in the comments that Jordan's going to try to redraft this based on something similar to Carlton's suggestion, and I'm in agreement there. Is there anyone else that wants to speak up in favor of continuing to include that market share calculation? Please raise your hand. Because we're going to still include the facts and include the observations and maybe even include a discussion of some hypotheses that we attempted to test. So all of that will be in there. But we won't throw out a number that has no meaning. I think that's what thus far Jordan, Laureen, Jonathan, and Carlton, and David have concluded, that we shouldn't include a number that we don't have a justification to include.
Yeah. Jonathan, I was just going to suggest, too, we may want to figure out with staff how we can, I do think we should preserve the work, just if some future team decides they want to look at this again, figure out how to the calculations and the data and so on. I think we could work with staff to create, an archive of, other projects or something like that, so that a future review team or some other someone looking into parking wouldn't have to start from scratch and could pick up our work at least. It's just that's a little bit different from including it in the body of the report.
Maybe in the appendix.
Yeah, that's what Jonathan suggested. I'd prefer more detail, not in an appendix, but just have a place where staff can store repositories of some of our calculations and projects that we've done in much more detail than are going to be included in the report generally, just so that future work will be able to buff of that and not just off of the text included in the report, which often sort of boils down the project work.
I can document it's like a jungle within a stone grid. It's really hard to find, as I understand. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Kylie, that we may want to work with staff to figure out how to organize this. Thanks, Aliza, for pointing it out that it's on the wiki. I agree with Kylie's sentiment. The wiki is not the most user-friendly environment, but Swift. But you know, there's probably just ways we can do some waypointing to get people to that data.
Also, if we believe that this is something worth further studying in the future, I believe if we still leave it within our report, or at least in the link, that will help to raise awareness of this issue.
Yeah, Kylie, like I said, I'm going to redraft this a little bit. Once we have that new text, why don't you take a look, and I think that's going to be the intent, right, is to say, hey, we found this phenomenon. It's pretty interesting. Future people may want to look at it and do a deeper dive than we were able to.
You can further discuss that in the handbook.
Yeah, I will have a new version of this before the face-to-face for discussion.
Thanks, Jordan. Anyone else have any comments or suggestions before we toss this back over the transom to Jordan to sort of gather our thoughts? All right, thanks, everyone, and thanks, Jordan, for your efforts on this paper. I think it's a critical discussion.
Happy to help.
And then our next topic on the agenda has to do with preparation for our updates that we'll be providing at ICANN 59. So maybe Jean-Baptiste, if you want to lead that discussion.
Hi, Jonathan. Yes, let me put something on screen so that we can refer to it.
And maybe speak up. Your voice is a little bit.
Screen now. So it's a summary of the different sessions that we have scheduled on our ICANN 59 agenda. So here, what would be important now is to receive from you some guidance and input on the different materials needed to deliver your message to each of the below groups. So I've divided the sessions in two parts. First one is the different sessions that we have during our face-to-face meeting, and the second one is regarding engagement sessions during ICANN 59. So what I did is that I reported so how much time we have per session, and also which information we have received from the group on what type of feedback or discussion topics they are expecting. And the other thing is as well, so you have received guidelines from the leaders last week to review the different public comments received and see whether there were any questions based on these comments, any trends, and any discussion or point that you would like to ask to those who have submitted public comments during these sessions. So here, it's really important that we have an idea on our side materials that are needed that we can already prepare for this session, and if you could guide us on that, thank you.
Do you folks have thoughts about what materials or the organization of the materials for ICANN 59?
Hi, Jonathan. Yeah, sorry, it's Aliza. Thank you. I just wanted to point out for the session with Trang and Akram and Maggie on the ICANN org input, we had put that, we had offered, they had offered to come and speak with you about any questions you might have about the feasibility inputs, or if you wanted to discuss, you know, any more about costs and the rest of that assessment with them. So that's how we noted on there that no slides we provided. We're really hoping that this would be a discussion based on questions that come from the review team. So it's really just providing you a chance to talk through that input. So I just wanted to point that out and see if there's anything in particular we could prepare beyond beyond what was provided in the public comment that was submitted.
Thanks, Aliza. I think that makes sense. I think what we want to probably do is let folks who are whose recommendations are most impacted by that lead that part of the conversation with ICANN.org. And my guess is that our discussion of those comments in particular during the face-to-face will probably generate a kind of a deck for discussion purposes when we have our meeting with them. I don't have our schedule in front of me, Jean-Baptiste, but how does it work out in terms of this discussion with ICANN.org and our ability to discuss that in advance? If that question makes sense. When is the meeting with ICANN.org, and do we have time in our face-to-face to prepare for it?
So our meeting with ICANN.org is planned. I will put the agenda so that everyone is up to date. So it's planned on the second day of the face-to-face meeting on Sunday, and it's the first item we have on the agenda. And if I look at what we have right now, So it's starting at 9:05 on Sunday, and if I look at the day before, so it's we have a long discussion on the public comment received, which is followed by determining updates needed on the report. We could use some of this time to prepare for the ICANN.org input, but I think the time would be limited. So as much as we can prepare beforehand, that would be ideal.
Yes, I just think that there's some practical limitations to our ability to prepare for that in advance, and so. I think we probably need to reserve some time because it's a long meeting with them, and we don't want to sit in silence. They're not going to present their concerns. They're accepting questions back from us, and so we need to get our ducks in the row, as we say, for that discussion. I think this whole cost-benefit discussion is going to be a significant one, and so we should make sure that we don't get lost in the details, recommendation by recommendation comments, and make sure that we're prepared to have that conversation with ICANN.org on the following day. But I welcome other people raising their hand and talking about this. And I know, Laureen, it's going to affect, and Drew, it's going to affect your discussions with compliance and things like that. So my feeling is that we should be prepared for that meeting. nobody's raised their hand. Absent any objection, I'm going to, I guess, try to coordinate with staff to make sure that preparation for this particular meeting on day two has some time set aside on day one.
Okay.
All right. Other questions or comments about that? Then let's go back to our list here. And when do we meet with the board caucus group, Jean-Baptiste?
So it's just after the end of our face-to-face meeting at 5:30 on day two. So we'll have the IGANOG input at the beginning of the day and the board caucus group at the end of the day.
Thank you. And the expected topic of that meeting is, in fact, the issues raised by IGANOG, right?
Yes, that's part of it, and discussing the draft recommendations. I just would like to remind review team members who might have not seen my communication that so the board caucus group it's a small group of board members with expertise and interest in our review team, and so the goal of the board caucus group is to create an interactive environment and get opportunities to discuss with us and report to the board.
Okay, but substantively, do they have topics they want to suggest, they want to discuss, other than ones raised by the feasibility assessment? Do we know of other substantive topics of discussion? When you say discuss the recommendations, I don't know what that means.
Have more information on this. As far as I can see, I think they will review the IGANOG input and discuss the feasibility assessment as it is described on this paper. But we don't have okay. More information than that. Elisa, your hand is raised, but I think it's an old hand.
I think so. Okay, so I guess I'm lumping the two of those together. We may need to do two different decks because of the difference in the amount of time. And Carlton, I agree with you. I think cost benefit probably is at the center of that, so I think that's got to be a big part, a big theme of our discussion. And I know Jordan has some thoughts on how to think about that, but I think we need to be very prepared to discuss cost benefit for sure. Not only in these meetings, but going forward during the ICANN meeting. So let's make sure that's a part of our discussion. So thank you. And then on the engagement sessions, 15 minutes to the registry stakeholder group. I know Jordan was discussing, expressing a desire to have a broader meeting with them and to use the 15 minutes less as an overview presentation, but instead to begin the conversation with the registry stakeholder group. Do you have some thoughts on what that discussion, how that discussion should begin in 15 minutes? I know we're trying to get a longer meeting, but how does your suggestion translate into the first 15 minutes, Jordan?
Yeah, it's a good question, Jonathan. I guess I would imagine the first 15 minutes would be pretty meta in that it would be like, hey, you guys submitted a lot of comments. We want to take them seriously. How do we engage together? Follow-up meeting being perhaps the clear, like that being maybe just a call to action to the follow-up meeting, and then whatever we think is appropriate post Joburg as well. But you know, I feel like if I look at the public comments, you know, we have the input from ICANN Oregon. We're going to be engaging with them on Sunday. It may be that there's appropriate follow-up there as well. The other, I think, highly impacted party from the recommendation is likely the stakeholder group, and then to a certain extent the other PDPs that we make recommendations towards. But sort of like if you think about where the recommendations actually hit, those are the parties, and so just figuring out how we make sure that we have effective engagement across all of those affected groups makes sense. Now, I know that others, so I would imagine folks like INTA would imagine that they're indirectly affected as well, and they submitted quite a lengthy comment. So I guess, like, do we just take – I guess my overall question is, like, how do we set up ways to appropriately sort of understand and react to sort of the bigger comments, not the ones that are relatively focused or that don't express particularly strong points of view, but the ones where there's been quite a lot of thought put into the recommendations. In particular, I noticed when I was going through the public comment shell, I don't know, staff can correct me on this, but I would guess that the majority of our recommendations are not supported, like, by public comments. And I think just thinking about what to do with that, does that mean that we should be engaging more with the community to figure out how to tweak them or something else? But in any case, with the registries in particular, I think it's just a matter of sort of saying, hey, how do we engage to sort of address some of the concerns that you've indicated, and or to make sure that we're refining recommendations in a way that address the concerns.
And Jordan, I think that approach makes sense, and that should be the core of our meeting. Do you think, in addition to the sort of, hey, we're not just throwing them over the transom message, is there anything at a high level that would describe their comments, which is unduly burdensome on them or something like that, or slow down the introduction of further TLDs? Is there two or three high-level messages that you feel like they delivered that we might want to acknowledge having heard, if that makes sense?
Yeah, that's Jonathan, I can probably work with you and pull together some content around that. The other thing I think that is probably important to call out is that there are some individual regis and or sort of other groups of registries that I think are largely constituents of the registry stakeholder groups. In many cases, those views diverge from the official registry stakeholder group comment. And so one other point we could raise would be, how do we sort of reconcile where there's divergence in opinion between, you know, there's like something that's like the verified TLD group, right? Like they really like the suggestion to incent verified TLDs, whereas the registry is sort of they don't quite say no, but they sort of raise a bunch of concerns about it. So I think it would be good to sort of highlight that, and at the same time, like, acknowledge a couple of the specific sort of classes. I mean, one of the concerns is roughly just a high-level cost-benefit analysis statement. Like, many, many of the comments are basically like, you don't explain why this is worth doing. And so that's one that we can clearly call out that we're doing something about, and then we can identify maybe one or two more as well.
Okay. Yeah, just so that in addition to saying, hey, we want to talk to you more, give the impression at least that we received some concrete messages from them. So let's try to go back and forth, maybe an email on how to deliver that message.
Sure. Okay.
Thank you. Laureen, do you have a sense on the GAC and what the best approach is for that meeting.
I have to give it some more thought. The GAC comments were generally supportive. So I have to think about what would be our best approach there. I think we'll probably want to leave some time for questions because I anticipate that different people will have different questions. I think one of their issues is going to be how this affects the timing of the new GTLD program, and indeed that was one of the themes I see in the public comments, especially of those favoring our recommendations, that some of this information really should be a prerequisite. And how does that affect timing, especially if there's not sufficient time to carry out the activities we recommend before a new program begins? So I think, one, we need to be open to questions, and, two, we need to be prepared to get questions specifically about the timing. But the GAC's comment was generally supportive, so I don't see – particular things that we need to tackle in terms of, you don't support this, here's something we can say to explain further or illuminate our reasoning. That's not the tenor of the GAC response.
So implications for timing and things like that is a topic of proactive discussion, and you're going to noodle a little bit more other issues that we might want to prompt the discussion on, but otherwise just be available for discussion.
Yeah, that's my take right now. I'll refine it, however.
Okay. I guess the only sort of time constraint within that is getting staff out. Prepare any kind of deck we want to use. Prepare a timeline. Go ahead, sorry.
Honestly, I don't know that a deck is especially going to be helpful. I mean, we are so formulaic in how we handle these things. Oh, we need a deck, and, even if it's just a give and take conversation. I don't know what we would have as a deck. I mean, they've seen our report. We're not going over our report. They've given their comment, which basically is supportive. To me, it's an opportunity for a conversation and an interaction. And in many cases, I feel our default to going to a deck of slides is actually not conducive to a give and take, because as soon as you have slides, what happens is you're clicking through the slides, they're watching the slides, you're talking at them, and there's no interaction. So I don't think we actually need to use slides, and therefore we're not going to be putting our staff in a time crunch.
Lorraine, I think those are great points, and my only caveat might be that if there's a couple of questions that we anticipate, that might have visual responses. So I guess I don't mean necessarily like putting together a bunch of bullet points to talk at them, but timeline, for example, putting the implementation of the recommendations on a timeline to show how it might affect the overall timeline of the program with respect to other things that stand in the way of the program, such as the subsequent procedures group, might be used as part of a response to a question, for example. So just a question to think about it creatively, that's all.
I think that's a fair point. I think for things we have definite data points for, like I think there's a predicted end to the PDP working group, there hasn't been a firm date set for, a new GTLD program. It's all been estimates. We could certainly put that there. What I'm wondering how we would do is how are we in a position right now to evaluate how long the data gathering for our recommendations would take? you know, so I think we could populate a timeline with some known data points, but I think that's incomplete. I don't think we're going to be able to say this is going to take this long and it would delay or not delay it this much. You know, so I agree, be ready to talk about timing. Say it again?
We might get some of that feedback from compliance, for example.
Okay.
If we
have that, absolutely.
Okay, thanks, Lorraine. That's a good sir. And then Wado, I saw a discussion about the BC. Okay.
Yeah, I was requesting if you had a little time on that day, you could perhaps pass there and just give them a little brief.
Okay.
Is it possible? Then I can inform them.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll confirm to you the time. Then I can by email afterwards.
Right, I might be on a plane too, but I will. I'll look and see if we can do it.
Okay, we'll communicate by email after this.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anybody on the call that has a sense of NPOC's desire from a meeting? All right, Jean-Baptiste, why don't we try to reach out to them and make sure that we're delivering the kind of discussion they want. 30 minutes is enough for some substance, so let's try to get a
Jonathan,
on their
Jonathan for NPOC and MCUC, it was in response to the email that we sent them, and I think what they expect is just to have an update on the CCTRT work. And to also have an opportunity to ask for their feedback. So I don't think it's something in particular. It's more general updates.
Okay. All right. And we're waiting to hear back from ALAC. I know there was some exchange back and forth with Alan. So we'll get back on top of that.
Yep. For ALAC. For some more information from one of their support staff, and I still haven't heard back from them. So the topic is to be confirmed.
All right. Sounds good. And I guess the same is true for NCUC. Is that it's more like the MPOC?
It's just an open discussion. Exactly. Yeah.
Similar to the GAC. That Lorraine was describing it. Okay, great. Thanks for generating this list, Jeff. Does anybody else have any discussions or know of other people that would like to receive an update? Okay. So I don't know if we have having missed the last plenary, I don't know if we have a structure for the next thing you have on here, which is review of public comments received. Is there an order that we were going in to that folks were presenting comments and responses?
Well, Jonathan, maybe I can quickly provide an update on that. Each tributary member has normally received last week an email each subgroup leader to with assigned recommendations where each review member needs to review the accuracy of the public comments and the summary of each public comments and recommendations. The deadline to submit our public comment summary was supposed to be last Monday. After a discussion and seeing that we were missing some feedback, we have decided to postpone it. So now the new date, and that's the final deadline, will be on July 10th, meaning that it's really important, and also to have our discussion at ICANN 59, that you work on the recommendation that was assigned to you and just identify whether there were any issues with the assessment of the comment, whether it was supportive or not, whether the summary of all public comments received for that recommendation is correct, and identifying also what would be the action items based on these comments, and also a suggestion would be to discuss these action items with your subgroup so that we can report them once they are discussed in the final version of the public comment summary. So just again a reminder that the final deadline now is on July 10th, and so far I've received feedback from Fabro, David, Laureen, and Drew, and I know that David needs to come back with a few more details, and Fabro needs to discuss a few points with his subgroup. So again, if you send back your input to your subgroup leader, I invite you to put staff in copy so that we are informed and we can already work on including that into the public comment summary. And Jonathan, I have included all the different comments that were received so far into the public comment summary. If anyone would like to discuss his input now, this is feasible. I can put that on screen. And I see a question from Laureen. Please, Laureen, go ahead.
Thanks, Jean-Baptiste. I will say in going through the comments that I did notice some general themes, and I think these are going to be things we want to discuss as a group, perhaps even before we wade into the comments. But I'm happy to put that in a paper. Yeah, I'm happy to do a brief one-pager about and circulate it about some of the themes that I see. And I focused on my, the issues that were relevant to the safeguards issue primarily. So I might actually also invite Jordan and Jonathan to then add on to my one-pager if there are other big themes they see regarding the work that they supervise. But on those themes, in addition to cost-benefit analysis, we got a couple of comments on precise language, particularly use of the word must for what should be recommendations, and an inconsistent use of the words should, must, and may. And that might sound picayune, but actually I think those are really important points, that we should be very consistent and precise with our language. And if indeed they are recommendations, the words that would be appropriate might be may and should rather than must. Certainly, another theme was that the review team lacked data and needs more data, but also consider the cost of such data and the scope of what we're recommending. Suggestions to pare down and consolidate recommendations, and that's something we've talked about that haven't done yet, but I think we should. A focus on considering what we really need to be prerequisites, and I think the thought in a lot of the comments was there are too many prerequisites. The PVP group certainly wanted their role more defined in terms of, are they free to accept or reject our recommendations? Do they just consider them? Can they go in a different direction? That's a whole other discussion. This raises a general point that we need to be very clear about who our recommendations are directed to. I think we tried to do that, but in some cases I think the readers still thought we weren't clear enough. Certainly, for some of the recommendations from our team, there was a caution about not getting into content regulation, and a corollary to be careful about recommendations that favor one stakeholder group over another. And then also, consistently in a couple of comments, making sure that there's an opportunity for a second public comment of the report in light of the new data presented by the DNS abuse study and the INTA study. So I just wanted to preview those. And I'll put it together, yeah, I'll put it in a one-pager, but I do think it's good just analytically to think about some common themes and big issues that are raised so that we keep that in mind as we're going forward with our next version of the report.
Thanks, Irene. I agree completely, and I think we probably want to work to organize our face-to-face around those big things. Drew, go ahead.
Yeah, the comments I looked at and scrutinized that were related to recommendations on which I had worked, I saw all the same things Irene just said. And just wanted to emphasize that we really do need to set aside some time to really articulate and then maybe even do a better job as far as articulating it alongside our recommendations, but articulate what our mandate is and, you know, how these recommendations emanate from that mandate and from the review we've done as part of that mandate. Because I think that even if we improve all of our recommendations as far as making them, defining them better in scope and making them more detailed, I think we're going to keep running into that with the PDP and subsequent procedures working groups. So I think we should definitely at least start to tackle that during the face-to-face.
That's an excellent point, Drew, particularly because in some of the public comments, I definitely saw recommendations of things to add that really would fall outside our mandate and, in fact, in certain cases would fall outside ICANN's mandate, much less ours. So I think that's an excellent point to make sure we're very, very clear about what we were asked to do. And what's appropriate for us to recommend.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the whole, yeah, it ties into all of it. You're right. You're absolutely right about even other people's comments.
Makes sense. Calvin, go ahead.
I noticed when I was going through the PDF document of our draft report, it wasn't searchable. I was wondering if we had a searchable copy somewhere. It makes life a little bit easier if you can actually go through and look for things.
I'm not sure searchable how, because it's obviously text searches and.
Maybe I'm just getting something wrong here, but if I go through, it doesn't seem to be. Oh, it is. No, I must have been doing something wrong then. Okay, all right, let me withdraw that.
Other questions? questions. David, do you want to just speak?
Hello?
You're very faint.
Can you hear me?
Barely.
Yeah, I'm on the computer. That's why I've been typing more than anything. Yeah. Nothing to say more than that, really.
Okay. I just saw you starting to type, so that's why I thought I would just... You should speak up. The extent to which we can have a single thread going in the plan area, the better. Any other questions or comments about process? I think we've concluded we need to look at some of the big questions and make sure we have those conversations face-to-face and that we can deal with the specific execution on a recommendation-by-recommendation basis at a sub-team level with approval by the plenary. But the plenary meetings, we should be probably pretty focused on what our process is going forward on some of the bigger questions.
Okay, it's Calvin again. Yeah, my searching, back to my searching thing. The thing that I couldn't search in the PDF was I couldn't search through the actual recommendations. So those appear to be in a table that doesn't seem to be searchable. I don't know if anyone else is having that problem as well.
Let's follow up with staff to make sure that it didn't become an image or an embedded table or something that isn't searchable. But
yes, Calvin, could you send me an example via email and I would try to help you?
Sure. Okay, I will.
Great.
Thanks.
Any other business questions or comments?
I did just want to pass on, and I've already passed this on to staff, but I just did want to mention some safety concerns that folks from the embassy in Johannesburg passed on, which is to be very careful if you do choose to take a private car, and especially a taxi and Uber, the last two which are recommended against, that there have been a number of follow-on robberies from the Johannesburg airport where cars are followed and then the passengers are robbed on arrival. So it's just this is just a general be aware, be observant, be cautious message, and also if you can travel with someone when you are going to your destination, that's also a safer method. So I'm just passing on that information, not to unduly alarm folks, but just to make people situationally aware.
Thanks, Doreen. So you were saying that taxis and Ubers were both not recommended?
They are strongly, not just not recommended, they are strongly recommended against. The reason being, at least from my briefing from the U.S. Embassy, is that, first of all, there's some hostility between Uber drivers and taxi drivers, and they can get into disputes with each other. And then the other reason being that there have been these incidents of follow-on robberies, and the strong recommendation, and this is on the ICANN website, the strong recommendation from ICANN is to take the train. The recommendation, at least I got from the embassy, is to arrange for a private company to shuttle you either from the hotel, or there's different companies that they recommended. So a little bit of inconsistency, but the one thing they are consistent on is don't do taxis and don't do Uber.
Uh, That's a pain. Okay, David, go ahead.
That is.
Yeah, thanks. I was just going to follow up something on what Laureen said there. Yeah, the train is very good from the airport to Santon, so that's a bonus. So I wouldn't hesitate taking that. And the thing I was just more generally about the meeting, if we're going to have our meeting on them Saturday and Sunday, and then we've got a few presentations and various input during the week, is it worth us trying to have a sit down on the Thursday morning or something at the end for those people who are still there? Because they're just thinking it might be worth having an hour, hour and a half together face to face if we are still there. Just a thought.
Or maybe Wednesday evening.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Let's firm that up, I guess, when we're all together. Any other questions? Any other business? All right, folks. Thank you very much.
Happy 50th plenary, everybody.
Yeah, happy 50th.
Happy 50th. See you later.
Safe travels, everyone.